Okay, great. Good evening, everybody, and I'd like to welcome everybody to the March 20th, 2008 Zone 3 Advisory Committee meeting. And I guess we'll start out with Mr. Benedict's checking to see who's here. Call the roll, please.
Roll call. Ms. Dean?
Here.
Mr. Ehring?
Here.
Mr. Ashton?
Here.
Mr. Costello?
Here.
Mr. Gehring?
I'm here.
Mr. Wallace?
Here.
And Mr. Reynolds is not here. You have a quorum, Mr. Gehring.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Benedict. Before we get going too far, I'd like to introduce Councilmember Chuck Ashton from the City of Grover Beach. He's a council member. Stick your hand in the air, Chuck. New member on the committee. I think he goes to the Board of Supervisors for confirmation on Tuesday. Is that not
right? That's correct, next Tuesday.
All right. Okay, thank you. And I appreciate anybody chiming in to help keep me on the straight and narrow, since I do tend to wander.
Is Ms. Dean on the board's agenda as well for confirmation?
She is. She's on the board for confirmation as delegate, and she's here tonight as an alternate, I think.
Exactly.
Is that right?
Right.
I thought I saw both names.
That public comment period, and we have the meeting minutes of January 17, 2008. If everyone's had a chance to look at it, we can entertain a motion. If not, any corrections? And actually, I do have a very slight correction myself. On page 2, under old business, we've got a couple of references to quad NOF. And I don't know how you spell NOF, but one of those two needs to be.
It's K-N-O-F-F.
K-N-O-F-F.
So both wrong.
Yeah, so perhaps they're both wrong.
I will check that. I believe that unless there's a P in there, I'm not sure. I'm not positive. But I will check on their letterhead and make sure I get it corrected.
Thank you. Okay. Anybody else?
I move approval of the minutes as amended with the correction on that one item.
I'll second the motion.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right, the Lopez Recreation Status Report. Don Mellon's in the audience, I see, so we're going to get a great report, I'm sure.
Good evening. Don Mellon, Supervising Ranger, County Parks. As you see in your report, our visitation's been pretty typically stable. We did see a small rise in the lake, which is going to help with recreation this summer. We're probably going to be able to use our Vista Lago swim area this year. We've got a new playground in the Mallard Cove area to replace our other aging playground, our 30-year-old playground that was in the Mustang area that's pretty antiquated. The new playground was primarily funded by a federal land and water conservation grant. We were really hoping to have it open this weekend, but we're still pending some of the playground safety surface that has not arrived. I think they miscalculated on how much they were going to need. So it looks like it'll probably be ready by next weekend, which is a little bit late for the Easter week. But it should be done quite soon. We've had no critical incidents reported this period. We've got our trout plants have been occurring from the Department of Fish and Game, and the county parks. Calaveras plants have been taking place once a month throughout the spring season. Our interpretive events, again, are going year-round with the kids' fishing clinics and problems, and we'll do it. And this particular event seems to be successful, at least in the short term, so we'll see how it goes. We're continuing with our infrastructure repairs in the park. We've had to remove some hazard trees in the park. There's been a small number of oaks and unfortunately a large number of some of the Monterey pines that were planted in the area at the beginning of when the rec area was first put in that have had to be removed because they're dead and are providing a hazard to some of the impact zones underneath them. The Cal Boating and Waterways Project, of course, the parking lot is finished, but we're still waiting on phase two, which would include the installation of the new launch ramps, not launch ramps, but launch ramp docks and the courtesy docks. There seems to be some hang-ups on from the state with some of their new their grant processes have made things take significantly longer than we had hoped. You can see the lake level revenue. Our revenue is up. Sometimes when you see our revenue up but our attendance down, typically that means that we've had strong annual pass sales because you've got one person paying for an entire year. And that's usually the only way I can explain it, other than we'll get more full hookup campers this time of year, and where later in the year it'll stretch out. We'll have a lot more day users during the summer, and then the numbers seem to even out a little bit, and it makes more sense. So that's all I have. If you have any questions this time.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Mr. Ashton.
Yes. Don?
Yes.
I was reading a paper, I think a lot of us did, just recently, about this mussel, the zebra mussel that's been baiting our waterways. I think they got hit hard by casitas, and that they've actually limited the usage of the lakes, the local boats, or what's there. Have you guys anticipated anything in that to prepare for such a thing?
Yes, we've been working on an education program since last year. We've been posting educational flyers. We've been handing out flyers to boaters. We're at this point, we're doing some selective screening of some of the vessels and doing some spot inspections. The response has really been varied throughout the state on this particular issue. It is something that's going to have to be addressed, and I know that from what I understand, that there's work in the works right now to set up a committee on this. There's definitely going on in Santa Barbara County, and we're probably looking at something like that here. We've got an active dialogue going on with bass clubs and fishermen on this issue. At this point, there's no discussion of anything in concrete right now. I think a lot of agencies are taking a wait and see on this. There's a lot of inconclusive necessarily that this is happening from recreational boats. I don't know for sure. I'm not a scientist, but we're definitely it's on our radar, and it's something we're working on. We've got the information on our website also, and that also includes some resources through Fish and Game, a U.S. Geological Survey, and California Department of Water Resources, letting people know what's going on. And of course, we want to be prepared and be proactive to take the next step. I believe some municipal governments have taken even further steps by limiting use or restricting use. We haven't gone there yet, and I don't know. I guess it's the future will tell what's going to happen next.
Thank you.
Mr. Earing.
Yeah, I have another question about that. Do we have any kind of educational brochures that you're planning on giving out to the boat people? I saw something in the paper today about what you ought to do. In other words, wash your boat down with hot water.
Yes, what we're using right now is
the engine.
Yeah, we're using the Fish and Game has a flyer on their website that we have we're using right now, and it's called "Don't Move a Mussel," and it's got all the information on decontamination protocols, telling you how you should clean your boat and what to look for. You know, cleaning, coming in clean and dry, making sure your live well has no water, making sure that there's no visible residue or any materials on your boat. So we are handing those to every boater that comes into the park so that they're aware of it. And obviously, we're keeping our eyes open as well for, I think, where you would really see the problem is boats that have been moored somewhere for any length of time, and you know, you have to narrow this down. But let's say a boat's been moored in San Diego County for a long time. Well, a boat that's moored obviously is going to attract this type of a mollusk. If we saw a boat that came in that was really dirty or had anything on it, we would certainly stop that boat, do an additional inspection to make sure that vessel's not coming in the lake and contaminating our waters. I think what they're more concerned about is these things that aren't quite so obvious, things like water in a live well or, I think that they're looking at the larvae transferred through the water, not necessarily, you know, you figure if a boat drove here from San Diego County from an infected lake, it's going to be driving, that boat's going to be on the freeway drying out, and these mussels can't survive for any length of time out of the water. I believe that they're talking about a 5-day period. Well, again, San Diego County is a long ways away. I'm not professing to have all the answers, but at this point, that's what the evidence is looking like, and I have a feeling this won't be the last that we'll hear of this. Any other questions?
Mr. Dean, anything? Don, is there any sort of a response planned in case of an infestation?
There are specific protocols that actually affect the ecology of the lake as well. So at this point, we're looking at it being a prevention issue. If we were to find out that we had them, then I know that we'd have to work closely with Public Works to determine what our next step would be.
Okay, thank you. Anybody else with questions on that? No? Thank you, Don.
Yes.
All right. I see someone from the public who'd like to speak on this. Please come up.
Marilee Hyman. I'm a representative, District 3, for the RAC, Water Resources Advisory Committee. We've had presentations on the zebra mussel, and even worse, the quagga mussel, which is even smaller. It's your fingernail size. And how it has infested the lakes and the major water systems of our country. And it is truly scary. And it takes just a few of them to start the whole process where you cannot take care of it after the fact. It has to be taken care of in advance. And I'm a little bit dismayed by the wait and see attitude and warning people and then wonder what will happen next when we're saying we would like to be proactive. I don't think wait and see is proactive. All you have to do is look at what's happened to the rest of the country. One of those little quagga mussels, the zebra is better known. Here it's the quagga that's worse. 1 million. One pair can have 1 million in 1 year to multiply. It will totally clog up the lake, every one of your filters. It will be extremely costly to clean up. So I think we should be doing more. Be proactive, really proactive, and not wait and see. And then what do we do after they're here? I'm wondering if that decontamination station... Nobody wants to say, don't come here with your boat. That would be devastating to our county. But mandatory boat washing, some setup, I think there should be a little more proactive here. And I'd hope you'd address it a little. Thank you.
Thank you for those comments. Anybody else in the audience like to
consider a station to wash the boats before they go into the water? And most, I wash my boat at home, okay, because we live around here and it's easy to pull a boat home and clean it in my driveway and have a cup of coffee or something. But I'm kind of wondering if the idea might not be to have a station that you wash the boat, everybody washes their boat before it goes in the water.
John?
I see that. Mr. Ogren's here to comment on some of the attempts by the county to prevent this.
Yes, Mr. Gehring, members of the board, Pavel Ogren, County Public Works Director. It is going to again be on the RAC agenda in April, and one of our recommendations with RAC is to, you know, set up a committee for review of the different alternatives. Certainly we recognize too that. It's a big challenge out there, and the work that we have done in researching this issue is consistent, you know, with Don's statements that once it gets established, then it's a maintenance issue. What can we do about it? The answer is we're not sure right now, but in terms of we're currently doing the research, and it's not, you know, part of the research is certainly about preventative prevention types of efforts that might be undertaken. Some of the examples also are in some of the lakes in California, they're not allowing private boats on the lakes, and they're allowing only the boats that are at the facilities to be rented out. In a non-contact body lake like Santa Margarita Lake, that's probably a more feasible option because there's really not a lot of private boats going there. Where it's primarily a fishing type of an operation, it's probably more feasible to use rented boats. At Nacimiento and Lopez, that's another question. We're not in a situation where we can make any recommendations at this point in time, but we are asking RAC for those who are interested to work with us on this issue and obviously Zone 3 as well. I think our research right now is both on the preventive care and also on how do you actually maintain. Some of the early information I'm getting back is that, this problem, in addition to being very bad in the Midwest and the Mississippi. You know, again, it begs the question of would there be, you know, modifications to the intake. My general understanding, though, is that the infestation really stays pretty close to the actual intake structures themselves, that it doesn't get, you know, go very far deep into the actual pipelines. That's sort of little consolation because the intake structures themselves, you know, are underwater, they're hard to get to, and they'd be very difficult to maintain. So the quote that they had from me in the paper is certainly reflective of what we're hearing, which is that even preventative types of measures are not proving to be very successful throughout the country. So, you know, that's why the quote was, we've also got to turn our attention to how do we, you know, look at it from a maintenance standpoint. But it's going to be on the RAC agenda again first week of April. We're recommending that, you know, a committee get together so that, you know, we can work on it with the various advisory committees, and certainly we'd look for participation from Zone 3, too, to see what can be done and take it from there.
Questions for Mr. Ogren, since he's volunteered to step up?
I wanted to mostly emphasize that, you know, we are researching the different options and looking at the issue and not,
my sense
not
of,
a wait and see.
My sense from your comments is that we're going to get these mussels and we're going to have to deal with them.
My sense from the presentations that I've heard is that even some of the fish and game stuff is that there's just not a lot of optimism out there about preventative measures right now. And, you know, Don was also pointing out, though, that in the major waterways where, you know, it can spread on its own, you know, maybe that's why the infestation in the Midwest on the Mississippi River and a lot of the different facilities has occurred. Maybe we do have a better ability because we have isolated waters to be effective in preventative measures. So, you know, again, overall, there wasn't a lot of optimism on the presentations that I had heard. But, you know, again, isolated area like the Central Coast, maybe we can be more effective in the preventative measures.
Questions?
Bob, I just wonder about some of the other countries and other areas that have had these mussels for a long period of time, how they've coped with it. Is it basically dual inlets and things of that sort?
That's my understanding, is that it's dual inlets so that they can shut one down, maintain it while the other one is working, and then, you know, go back and forth.
I'd certainly recommend that, Mr. Chairman.
I think it'd be good also to have the feedback coming back from John and Dean and the Public Works Department as they do their research and bring that back to the technical committee meeting probably in April or May.
I can put that on the agenda. I know we have been, actually a couple of weeks ago, we started into a little bit of a research to make sure we understood clearly what it was we were dealing with, so there weren't a lot of false theories out there. And as Don has mentioned, that's what we've been coming up with. We're going to have to work with parks because obviously they have the boats come in and we end up with a product if we have an issue. So there's not a lot of solution, and there's some infrastructure issues. If you wash the boats and the water goes back in the lake because we didn't want to lose the water, well, that doesn't help much. So there's technical things we have to deal with to try to do that. But we'll bring it back at the April meeting of the TAC and embark on that to some extent.
And the risk does seem to be higher associated with, you know, bilge water or wet water inside the boat in the larvae's. And the risk is much less with the actual mollusk that might be attached to the outside of the boat. But it's that, you know, your wet wells inside the boats and the existence of larvae where Fish and Game is saying that that's the higher risk.
Thank you. And Mr. Wallace, when are you back from the Galapagos?
April 24th, so I'll probably miss that meeting, but yeah. I'll catch up with you.
Okay, thank you. So schedule it, Mr. Benedicts, and we'll take it from there.
I'll do that. I would suggest I'll try to, Don, maybe have somebody from Parks there, whether it be Pete or somebody on your staff at the TAC committee the first Thursday at 10 o'clock here. That'd be great. I'll try to give you a call and remind you. Thank you.
Anybody else have anything on this item? Seeing none. All right, Lopez Recreation Status Report. Mr. Benedicts, I think that you're up on that.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Gehring. The current lake level is approximately 76%. We are producing at the Lopez Water Treatment Plant about 4.25 million gallons per day, receiving about 0.75 million gallons per day of state water. I apologize for not having the overwhelming detailed monthly operation report in your packet. Our staff is pretty overwhelmed by all the things that we're doing. As you probably know some of these things, but I'll commit to you that the next meeting will have at least the last couple operating since May 29th of last year. So after about 8.5 months this week, we did take down the chlorine dioxide contact basin and had about 4 feet of sludge in one location of it, but we drained that and cleaned that out. Took about 6 hours for our staff to do that, and that went pretty well. Every time we do something new, this is the first time we've done that, we learned how to do it easier, better, faster, more simple. So each one of these things, this is the first time we've done that. The plant's been online continuously, except for a couple of hiccups, producing good water. And again, we're optimizing things down there. Next week, we'll do a clean in place, which is basically our monthly cleaning of the filter membranes. And that'll be completed next week. Every time we do one of these monthly cleanings, it's a little bit different. This past month, we have been trying a little bit different recipe as far as the cleaning regime, the daily cleaning regime on each one of the five racks. We're kind of grouping three racks and trying one thing, and two other racks, we're trying something else to try to reduce the amount of chemicals that we're using to backwash the racks, if you will. So we're on sort of a trial and error basis of that to see if it's good enough, how well it works, how well it cleans the filters out. So that's going well, and I am pleased to report to you that the staff, I had a staff meeting today with all my operators up at the plant, and they're all getting much more comfortable with operating the plant. It's nice to see a few people actually smiling from time to time instead of growling at each other up there after 8 or 9 months. And for the new members, probably know we've been working, the staff has been working 24 hours a day until around December on the plant, and we're now at 16 hours per day, and we're discussing how we can reduce that even further, if it's possible, to go down to maybe 12 hours per day with a manned staff. The plant's running 24 hours per day. But we've gotten a lot better control of it. And as I mentioned before, I hate to be redundant, but there is a large emotional transition that had to take place from our old 40-year-old plant to this new state-of-the-art, quote, automatically run plant. It's all electronically controlled for the most part. There's a large mental transition that we really weren't prepared for, and we've gotten past the majority of that. And as I said, I see my operators smiling a lot more this month than the past couple.
Questions for Dean on that? Ted, looks like you've got a question.
I've got a question.
This thing? Oh, okay. Okay. How'd we come out with the problem we had with it, where we burn up the generators, or the, I forget what it was we burn up, but anyhow, it was due to the fact that probably were some kind of problems, and we didn't know whether it was lightning or whether or not burn up the transformers.
What Mr. Ehring's referring to is, I believe, in January when we had a couple of storms, or lightning or thunderstorm, we lost three of our large pumps on our pre-treatment system. Those were all replaced, the motors, excuse me. The motors were replaced, didn't cost us anything. We're still not sure why that happened. We are doing monthly power surge checks. PG&E has provided us equipment, but they only do a check for 3 days. So I've tried to get my staff to predict when we're going to have the next lightning storm, and on those 3 days I want that thing installed. So good luck to me to get that done. But suffice it to say, it's working fine. It didn't cost us anything extra to do that. And we're just going to try to look at that in advance and see what happened. We really don't know why that's happened. Our research from the initial problem didn't indicate that there were any power surges that would have affected those motors. And as some of you may remember, the motors are deep into our electrical system. They're not the first motors of where you would imagine we'd had a lightning strike or an interruption that it would be the first motor that would receive a bump in the power. So we're not really sure what's happened. But we fixed them, and they're 100% now. So.
Okay. And it didn't cost us anything.
It did not cost us. No, it was done under warranty, yes.
All right, good.
Any other questions? Mr. Dean, no? Mr. Benedict, sir, and perhaps John Beaton, I'm interested in the sludge in the chlorine dioxide basins. This is probably expected due to the oxidation process.
I'm not really sure what the source of the sludge would be. One of the possibilities is that as we started up the dissolved air flotation and might have had a few hiccups there where some sludge might have carried over, so it could have been black stuff, a lot of hydrogen sulfide smell. So, again, it may have been partly a carryover of getting the dissolved air flotation system started up. I think 6 months from now, looking at it again, it'll be interesting to see how much is still there. With the hydrogen sulfide, there's likely it exerts some chlorine dioxide demand too, so getting that cleaned out I think will also help with the keeping a good residual at the other end. So,
THM precursors maybe?
You know, it certainly could contribute to that. Again, the plant has just been doing excellently for THMs. I just looked at results today. THMs coming out of the plant there, treated water from the plant were in the neighborhood of about 10 parts per billion. So by the time we combine that with some state water, which is now 65 parts per billion, we ended up with something in the 20s down through the system. So.
And the MCL on that's now 80?
80, correct, yeah. We're in the process of going, being incorporated into the stage 2 disinfectant byproducts. And where in the past we've had a requirement of being less than 80 average throughout the system, we're going to a locational running annual average. So each site in the system would need to stay below 80 average over the year, and that should be no problem at all now with this. The kind of results we're seeing in the plant.
Well, on that subject, how do you think we'll do out at Avila, Port San Luis?
Port San Luis, looking at the most recent results there, again, they were, I think, 27, 28 is what was being fed into the...
John, I was wondering what kind of a THM pickup you're getting as you go through the system from the plant with maybe in the low 20s, like you're saying, out at the port. What... results are you getting out there?
Throughout the distribution system, because we're on chloramines, it really does seem to be very constant. Okay. So it's coming right off of our membranes when we go through our chlorination and adding the ammonia to form the chloramines. At that point there, it's they're very low. They're, like I say, 10 parts per billion. The greatest contribution we're seeing right now is just the mix from the state water.
Which, what are we getting when we go to free chlorine?
Free chlorine, I'm interested in looking at that. Historically, we've seen some values jump up substantially if we go to, getting as much of the organics out beforehand, I think, certainly helps.
Thank you. Any other questions for either Mr. Beaton or Mr. Benedix? And, Dean, did you finish your plant upgrade?
I didn't. No, I haven't started the plant upgrade yet.
Thank you. Then are you ready to do that?
I am ready if you'd like.
I am if we have no other questions from the committee.
Okay. Regarding the plant upgrade, again, the construction was completed, the plant operational on May 29th of last year. We have any number of things that we are trying to finalize sort of in two categories. As I've mentioned to you in the past, the state revolving loan fund that we've got a loan for $26 million for the upgrade, all work on that loan, under that loan, has to be completed by June 30th of this year. So we are trying to do the things that we need to do, that we can arrange and implement by June 30th so that we can incorporate those things which are all associated with the plan upgrade by that time. Anything that we cannot finish will need to be budgeted for next year, the next fiscal year starting July 1st, and they are in the budget that Jennifer will be talking to you about shortly here. So that's kind of the overall picture. We have several groups of issues that are uncompleted or need a little bit more refinement. Just for your, again, agent, for your committee's information, Black and Veatch had promised us to provide some remedial fixes. They have provided two more things since our January meeting. Neither of those are either complete or adequate in our perspective, in the staff's perspective. I am going back to the Leopold Corporation, who designed and provided the equipment for the dissolved air flotation system. I'm going back to them and asking them if the proposed solution for the cover over the DAF unit is adequate. We don't think it is. We don't think they think it is. I'm not sure how they're going to respond to us because they were involved in the design with Black and Veatch. They were also the subcontractor for Cushman to provide the equipment and assisted them in installing it. So I have to separate their perceived liability from us coming back and attacking them for this cover. The DAF system is working fine. The cover is the issue. That's the Black and Veatch work that I'm looking at. Now, Black and Veatch is also still assisting us with the Paul system, the membrane supplier, because we are yet to do the 42-day performance test for the membranes. And that test is important because we have a contract with Paul when they provided the bid that we would not use more than a certain amount of chemicals and energy. And so our contract closeout is related to a 42-day test, which will compare what we actually see use in chemicals and power to what they proposed. If there's a big diversity there, then they owe us money, or we have a reduction, or there's somehow an equitable adjustment. And we know right now, based on the chemical usage that we're using, that they're in big trouble. So they are trying to come up with some suggestions to do things, one of which I got a proposal a couple of weeks ago from Paul is to provide a softener. They would provide a softener, water softener, to soften the water that is used for the membrane system cleaning. And we're evaluating that proposal, and we'll respond back to Paul in our best interest to see if the type of softening, first of all, if the softening idea is going to work at all for us. Two, if it benefits us or Paul, because I'm concerned that they're only trying to fix their problem and increase our operations and our expenses. And thirdly, if there's another type of softening system that may work better but cost us less, because obviously they're not trying to provide us the least expensive or the best solution for our system. So I do have their commitment that they are trying to help us we're not trying to punish them or crucify them. I've asked them to help us from our perspective to make this plant work as efficient as it is because it's installed. This is what we're going to be moving forward with. The Paul Corporation will be, as you know, involved for a long time here, providing replacement membranes as they do wear out, which they do. So I'm working through that with Paul. Tomorrow, I understand, a report from Kennedy Jenks, who is helping us to evaluate some other operational and optimization issues about the plant that we've identified that Black and Veatch has been unable to help us do. I should have that report and look at that next week. We'll be looking at what the ramifications, implications of that. If I can do some of those things simply, we will. But they're all pretty complicated. So I'm hoping that I can find a path to go down because we're using so much more chemical to clean the filters than we anticipated. We are generating a lot of neutralized chemicals, which we didn't think we'd be using, and therefore we're having a problem disposing of that in our sludge beds. That was not included in the original design, neither using that much more chemical or replacing or improving our sludge beds. So that's one of the things that is I'll probably be bringing to you next year. There's some of it's in the budget, actually, that Jennifer will be talking to you about, to be able to get those so we have much more flexibility than we do right now. One of my things that I tried to get Black & Veatch to do with this design, as did my predecessor and the operators, is to give them as much flexibility to have different options to do things. We have some of that in some of the chemical feed systems, in some of the injection points, but we don't have that in some of the we don't have it in our disposal system. As you know, the water is neutralized, it's settled, and the clear water goes to Rio Grande Creek, and we certainly don't want to violate anything with respect to that. We have permits to that, and we continue to meet those, but we're very concerned about that, and that's one of the things at the top of our list right now. So we are approaching these various different fronts sort of all at the same time in a priority manner, and make a long-term resolution for this, because we'll have this plant for quite a while. I think I'll leave it there, but there's numerous fronts that I continue to work on, and I'll take questions.
Okay, thank you, Dean. Questions?
Yes, Joe.
Dean, is there any time frame under which we have to complete this 42-day test?
No, at this point, since Paul hasn't really done their part of the contract work, we are giving them as much time as they want to try to optimize what they have done. And we're working with them on that. So short answer is no, there's not. The contract probably says that the 42-day test was supposed to be done last summer, but there was no way that they could have done that. So we're working in a mutually agreeable fashion to let them optimize, then we'll do the test, then we'll negotiate the contract out and finish it.
Okay. And on the issue of the excess sludge and the sludge pits, since that wasn't considered before, what options do we have on that? Are we going to be on the hook for taking care of that ourselves?
I believe that we will be able to. We have two sludge beds that are operational out there. We kind of got caught in the plant startup neutralization of those. By the time you're done neutralizing materials, you end up with new materials, and we're trying to figure out what those are creating and how much room we need, whether we need to separate that water. We have different types of water that's coming off the plant into the sludge beds. We don't want to put a bunch of water and flood the sludge beds. We want to have sludge in those beds and get rid of the water. So we're in a process of doing that. But indications are that we're going to be able to solve that problem, but we may need to do some two of the beds that are not developed. We may need to develop those and put some piping in to be able to have some flexibility with drying them and utilizing different type of disposal techniques. So I think this is not a real expensive issue, but it's something we need to address.
Anybody else? Other questions?
Dean, how's the progress going on flattening out some of the spikes on the control system?
We had two erratic variations, and I described them as the front end of the plant and the back end of the plant. The front end of the plant means that the major valve that allows raw water to come in is controlled by a wet well, which has pumps that feed the membrane system. And giving credit to my chief plant operator, who worked extremely hard on this above and beyond, he asked some questions of the designer and of the manufacturers of all of this equipment, said, why don't we do ABC? Well, the short story is, by his questioning and some changes we made, the front end of the plant is very stable now. And that's to Craig Kessler's credit. The back end of the plant, we still have not been able to really figure out what to do with that, because each rack has its own flow meter on it. Each rack takes water off of the combined effluent, the clear water pipeline, and circulates it back into the rack. And each one of the five racks has a mind of its own. It has different timing. It has a different process, and that causes the system to react electronically to try to continue to catch up with a change in water, which changes all the chemical feeds beyond that point. So I guess to answer your question, I'm not sure about that, John. We did send our operators over to Clovis to take a look, and we asked them that question. Mr. Beaton, I think, went with them, and I think their answer was, yeah, that's the way it works, both at the front end and the back end. It's hundreds of these type of membranes that feed water off themselves, and they do vary a lot. So we're still looking at it. I'm not sure where we're going to end up at.
Well, just reflecting on your presentation of the TAC and Craig's contribution and John's contribution to it, I think I'd like for you to pass along our thanks to Craig for his detective work, at least in stabilizing the front end of the plant. That was great.
Anybody else got any questions, Mrs.? No. Sounds like we're a little bit ahead of Clovis, though.
Yes. Most of the, I mean, John could answer, but I think all the questions that we asked, it's like, yeah, is there something wrong with that? It's like, that's the way it works. You know, we got all this sludge. Yeah, that's the way it works. They have a different system. They have a sanitary sewer. They can dispose of their effluent and neutralized material. That's easy for them. I think their system is not as critical as ours in that there's a supplemental water supply. Is that right, John? So they don't have the criticality of that we have with we're sort of remote on our own, and we're the major provider of water. So maybe John could speak to that a little bit.
Clovis does have a Paul membrane filter plant, much like Lopez. Pre-treatment process there was a ballasted flock instead of the dissolved air flotation. They had quite a few more racks than we had, so their capacity was quite a bit more. They were having very significant problems with their ballasted flock and the sand from that coming onto their membranes and likely destroying the membrane. So they might end up having to replace a lot of modules there very early on, so it was a big issue. Again, have a lot of well water, so their membrane plant is really a supplemental to them, and they'll go shut the plant down for a month at a time. So it wasn't as a critical need to them as it was to us. We did go there. We asked them about some of the changes in these flow rates that we've talked about. They thought theirs were very constant, and we said, well, show us on your SCADA system. And they pulled it up on the SCADA system, and they go, oh, well, I guess it does fluctuate. And so they didn't even realize it. So.
Okay, any other questions for Mr. Benedix or perhaps Mr. Beaton? Everybody happy? And you're done, Mr. Benedix,
with that report? With my plan upgrade report, Mr. Gehring.
Okay, thank you. And I think, unless I'm all fouled up. Hold on, Jennifer. Let's get that straightened out for a second. There it is. F5, please. There you go.
So far. No. Maybe I'm...
You want me to...
If you want...
Sure.
Dean, could
you want to go up?
Go
are we going down or up, Jennifer?
You can just hit enter.
Okay.
Sure.
There you go. Okay. So in tonight's presentation, I will be going through the budget process. I will give you an overview of the 08-09 budget, and I will answer any questions that you have afterwards. I did bring extra copies of the budget book in case anybody needs one. No? Okay. If you could go ahead and
hit
it.
I can use one if you have an extra one.
Sure.
Thank you.
Okay, if you could go ahead and hit enter. Okay, the budget review process basically there's four steps. First, the budget books were distributed at the advisory committee meeting, which met in January of this year. We also sent budget books to both the finance committee and the technical advisory committee members. Next, in February, public works staff met with the finance committee members of your districts, where we reviewed the budget. We discussed some of the line items in the budget booklet, as well as the water treatment plant upgrade. We also met with the technical advisory committee for the budget overview. Now we are returning the budget process back to you, to your committee, and asking for your endorsement of the budget book. On June 16th through the 18th, the County Board of Supervisors will have their budget hearings where the county budgets, including Flood Zone 3, are reviewed and approved. If you could hit enter again. Now I will be discussing the budget one more time. Dean? Thank you. Okay. This next slide is a graph of the overview of the estimated versus actual billings for Zone 3. As you can see, the actual, the most current five-year billing estimates that we provided, and then the green dots would be the actual proposed budgets. And if you could hit enter one more time. This next slide shows a summary of the proposed 08-09 budget compared to the 07-08 budget. And this is included in the budget books on page 4, and it summarizes all the detailed information for pages 5 through 7. This is just put in here for information. One more time, Dean. Thank you. Overall, expenditures have increased 11%, which is primarily due to the increase in costs at the water treatment plant. Total operations and maintenance has increased 29%. Within the total O&M, we have two categories. We have routine O&M and non-routine O&M. The routine O&M expenditures have increased 32%. This is mainly due to the water treatment category and same issues that we discussed in January. Staffing went up from 8 hours a day up to 24 and then back down to 16. In addition to this, chemicals and utilities have almost doubled in costs. The non-routine O&M expenditures have decreased 5%. The non-routine O&M category usually consists of special projects and studies that range from 1 to 3 years in length, and these costs fluctuate from year to year depending on the nature of the scheduled projects. Debt service has increased less than 1%. A slightly larger amount of the bond debt is budgeted to be paid through Zone 3 property tax. The completion date of the water treatment plant was moved back 1 year from June 30th, 07 to June 30th, 08. Therefore, as in the 07-08 budget, we only budgeted one principal payment for the SRF loan. Capital outlay has decreased 45%. One of the larger projects relating to the upgrading of the plant facilities, upgrading the sludge beds, will be funded out of Zone 3 reserves. The remaining projects consisting of the membrane feed effluent system, the pH suppression system, and the Clearwater Reservoir Ladder are proposed to be included in the 08-09 billings. Also, as a reminder, we added the cost per acre foot schedule on page 14 of the budget book. If you could hit enter one more time. This concludes my report. And
I wondered if you had, maybe not tonight, but maybe you can supply us through TAC or separately, a projection of where our per acre foot costs are going to go over the next 5 years. Which would be helpful in terms of our long-range planning, in terms of rate increases and so forth.
You're just talking about the five-year billing estimate?
Yes.
Yeah, I think that we are working on that right now. We're just not real sure where those costs are going to be. We don't feel that we can give an accurate billing estimate at this point until we see where the costs for the water, because the water treatment plant is such a large part of the total billings that we want to wait and see where the costs stabilize, and then at that point I can provide that.
We have a little bit of chicken or the egg thing, because with the Prop 218 necessity for voting on your rate increases, a lot of agencies are putting escalator clauses in there that would help eliminate the need to go back for subsequent Prop 218 votes, and that projection would be helpful to see if the escalator factors were sufficient to meet the future needs going on out for several years in the future.
I guess I can talk to, I can bring it back and discuss that with my supervisor and see what we can provide for you.
Sure, that'd be a great help. Thanks.
I was going to say that some of the projections, as I mentioned, with the chemical usage changing and the power usage changing a little bit, our operations staff, we haven't really found a target yet that we're working on with the staff. So we're kind of every quarter looking at this, and I think probably what we'll do is just we should maybe just pick a time period, Jennifer, to say we'll use this last data set to project maybe the next 5 years or come up with something, some assumptions, so that we can help you to make your projections that make sense.
Pablo again, just wanted to add a quick comment. You know, as Jennifer mentioned, we do recognize the importance of the multi-year, five-year projections. As she also mentioned, one of the concerns about doing accurate future years projections right now is we have to, you know, get the plant to stabilized operations and maintenance. But one of the things that we discussed internal to the department is that that's why, like on the sludge beds, we made the recommendation, let's fund those out of reserves this year.
Part of the strategy, of course, with some of the agencies like AVLA that have a state water entitlement, is trying to decide whether to invest in a drought buffer investment, especially with the new reliability agreement going through, compared to the cost that we would have on Lopez water. So I really understand the need to have some stabilization of the plant to project those costs, but it would be helpful even for educated guesses to help us make those decisions with respect to drought buffer water.
Yeah, and I think that we're certainly prepared right now to, at least provide a range of estimates, you know, sort of a worst-case scenario versus a more, you know, favorable scenario. And then on the comparison of the two water supplies also, you know, breaking down, especially on state water, variable costs versus fixed costs, since that comes into the equation on decision-making as well.
Not easy.
Pablo, before you leave, that these projects we're going to fund out of reserves, they're going to be coming out of the designated reserves?
What we still have from a carryover, you know, from several years ago is a number of Zone 3 reserves that aren't really allocable to specific agencies, but it's just the Zone 3 reserves that we have from historical operations. That's where we would be looking at. Those are the reserves we would be looking at utilizing. Versus under the new contracts, since the seismic project was built, we have to track reserves by each of the different agencies. And so we would not be looking at utilizing those reserves. But the answer is, which designated reserves? It's the designated reserves that came from historical operations that are just general zone 3 reserves and not the new ones. I think your budget book pointed out that on the new reserves, we track them by agency now. There was something in there about that. But anyways, when the contracts changed in 2000, you know, we have new responsibilities in tracking new reserves, and we're talking about the reserves that we have from historical operations.
And those are probably the ones shown on page 8, Jennifer, perhaps? Well, I mean, the basis for my question, really, not for the details of the reserves, but I've noticed the reserves that are designated are up around $1.7 million. It seems as though that's grown over the years, and we can probably comfortably fund these projects out of that?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. And that's so, and part of the stabilization is making sure that we still maintain, you know, sufficient reserves as well. But that's $5 million earlier this year, and she and Will did a lot of follow-up with the state, and I think they're all caught up now. Yeah.
So. Okay. Thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Ogren or Jennifer at this point? Mr. Ehring.
Yeah, I'm wondering at the rate that it's costing us for overruns, how long can you go on this reserve? You got $2 million in there. Before this, you know, I'm anxious to know when this gets very critical.
I think I'm not following the question.
Well, it's costing overruns for these sludge, okay, to handle this excess sludge, the problems that we have.
Well, we budgeted. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Have you budgeted overruns for that, or are we looking at a shortfall in the near future because of the fact that we can't cure this problem?
Well, this is one specific project that we're pulling, I believe it's $300,000 from the reserves for this one capital project. Okay. I don't think that we're not looking at.
You're not looking at any operational or maintenance overruns. Is that right?
Well, to the extent that we can predict where we're going to be a year from now, we're on a declining, I guess, trend with the amount of labor that we need to operate the plant. We're still learning as far as the maintenance requirements, and the things that we are doing are to reduce the maintenance and reduce the labor that we have. So we're not really sure what our target is going to be. I guess the simplest way for me to look at it is if in the past few years we've had 4.5 equivalent man years operating the plant, if we're going to end up at 6.5 man years, we don't know what that is yet. That's kind of what we're approaching because we're trying to figure that out. That's one of the cost overruns as the chemicals may be and as the power may be. The power is probably going to be a lot more simpler to figure out. And the capital projects will be as budgeted as we can get to those. And there's, as Pavel sort of described, we will budget a project that makes the most sense to do the ones that are most effective first, and some of the other ones will have to wait. I know I can't do all these things within the next year, even if I had the money. So I think we're not there to make a projection other than
operation side for this year. As Dean had mentioned, we had to go to a 24-hour shift for a while, so certainly we're running at a higher rate. We've been able to reduce that back down to a 16-hour shift. But I think that will really help gauge is how we're really tracking so far.
Okay, and my next question would be, what does the county use for escalation? What kind of percentage do you use on escalation?
When we're anticipating
future expenses, and
we use 5% expenditures for operations and maintenance.
Thank you.
Dean, forgive me if I missed this. I may be kind of a blockhead here, but what level of staffing have we budgeted for the plant in this budget for the coming year? Are we at 16 hours a day? Are we at 12 hours a day? Or what level are we budgeting for?
I think we've
budgeted for 16.
Is it 16 hours? Is 6.5 man-year equivalents?
Right.
I think
right.
That's what we ended up at, which is pretty close to what we saw this year other than the big bump in the 24-hour day shift.
Right.
So that's sort of our target.
That sounds like a safe figure at this point.
I appreciate that. There was a significant amount of money spent to do this, and I told my staff that today. I said, the folks that pay for this and that consider this see a brand-new expensive plant. It's all automated, so what do we need anybody for? And as we discuss this more and more, I want to bring that information to you so you understand it, because things go wrong with the millions of electrical signals that go back and forth as you drive cars. You understand your car doesn't work perfect all the time. So I want to get some more information back to you as I can, as it makes sense, as I can simplify it, so that because it's certainly a concern of mine that we explain to you what's going on, and you know, if we determine that we need another person because there's a phenomenal amount of maintenance that we have to do now to keep all this stuff running properly, then I will bring that back to you, try to explain that to you. So it's on the top of my mind all the time, and I want to provide you as much information as I can with it.
Thank you. Other questions? And you're looking for an endorsement tonight of this budget?
That is correct.
When would it go to the board?
In June. June. The budget hearings are June 16th through the 18th.
Say that Pismo Beach is prepared to endorse this tonight. Our financial department has looked it over, and as has our city manager. So if you want a motion tonight, I'm prepared to make it. And so I'll make that motion that we endorse the 2008-09 fiscal year flood control zone 3 proposed budget.
Second.
You want a roll call, Mr. Benedicts, or voice vote?
We can do the voice vote.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Passes unanimously. Thank you. And for new members on the committee, there was a time when we found out about the budget being passed by the board before we saw it.
several years ago.
Quite a while ago. Okay, and I see Jennifer Colvard still standing there. It looks like you have plant upgrade budget tracking to talk about.
Yes. Again, it's just if you look at attachment 3-1, it's in there for information if you have any questions on it. This is similar to the one I included in the agenda in the January meeting. A little bit different format. I think I can do that.
And Mr. Wallace?
Still trying to find it. My eyes are old, too.
Well, while Mr. Wallace is looking for his, has anyone else got a question? All right. Jennifer, were you going to make a presentation, or is that all we need to hear?
No, it was just for information.
Any questions? And do you need what do you need on this? Anything? It's just receive and file.
Yeah, this is just for you to look at.
Okay. Any discussion at all? No discussion. All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Colvard. And we're to interim downstream release schedule. Mr. Benedix.
Yes, to bring your committee up to date, the IDRIS is the interim downstream release schedule, which is an interim plan that we have to creek to the extent that we don't believe we would be having any impact on the special species in there. We'd make a reduction of the releases from the dam by a half a cubic feet per second, which is approximately a third of a million gallons per day in daily increments. There's a lot of we need to make sure we don't reduce basically the flow in the stream or in the creek. And in so doing, the only time, this is the first year we've attempted doing this, and our first opportunity was to do this the end of January. We did have about a week of rain subsequent to a lot of antecedent moisture, earlier rain, and we have to build up enough moisture in the soil and in the stream so that we don't have any reductions. And as simplistic as it sounds, basically we had about a week that we reduced the releases from the dam by half a million gallons per day the first day. The second day, we reduced it again to 2/3 of a million gallons per day. We went about 3 days. Of course, the rain stops and starts a little bit. After about 4 or 5 days, we determined the creek was going down, and we had to increase those back half a million gallons at a time. So we had about a week of reduction of releases, and we found we're learning. It's kind of a learning experience for us. We have monitors at most upstream and downstream. We've added a few stream gauges, as you know, in various locations. So we have saved some water. I think we've got a little bit smarter about it. So whenever it is raining, we're watching it. We're watching what our cumulative rainfall is. And we're trying to take a best guess at what the predictions for rainfall is and where we're actually getting it. So we saw it fairly successful. We need to get about between 5 and 10 inches of rain initially before we can even start thinking about this program. And as I believe most of your advisory committee members know, that it is on the Internet. I know when I'm at home at the evening and it's raining outside, I can look and see what's maybe raining like crazy in Atascadero, but it's not raining down here, so I don't make any calls to reduce releases because there's a big variation in rainfall, as you know. So we think this is going to be workable. If we had a lot more rain, we could have reduced it some more. We could have reduced it longer, but we're kind of watching that, and I think we're documenting everything so we know what's going on to protect the agency. You know, the HCP right now is sort of moving in the attraction flow regime and some of these kind of things, but I think the data we're getting shows the cause and effect at specific locations or the lack of any cause of effect, and so we can utilize that as we go through the HCP process to show National Marine Fisheries and Fish and Wildlife Service that, hey, we have a trial period of things that happened, and there's a basis for us wanting to reduce flows or maintain flows, that type of thing. So whether this plan continues, it seems to make sense. My biggest concern is that at the base of the dam where we do measure it, we see a direct immediate impact of that release because there's no contributing area at the base of the dam. So if that's going to be a critical point, it's going to be very difficult for us to try to save a lot of water at that point if that's a controlling factor. So that is has risen to the surface as a primary issue. Downstream, everything looks real good as far as reducing the releases. But that's part of the process that we'll be working through with Anthony Spina, National Marine Fisheries Service. They haven't responded to this, by the way, at all. They know about it. They don't want to acknowledge it. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in the next agenda item.
Questions for Mr. Benedix? And by it, you mean the IDRIS? They haven't responded to the IDRIS?
That's correct. They have not responded to that. They're aware of it. But they can't take any position, I guess, because it would be a position of endorsement or something, some liability is what our kind of perception is.
We did save some water that week?
Yes, we did. I would guess probably about 5 to 10 million gallons that week.
Any questions or other discussion? All right, seeing none, on to HCP processing status. And Mr. Benedix, you're still up, it looks like.
Yes. I'd like to ask if all the committee members got a copy of our letter to Rodney McGinnis, or anyone not get a copy of the letter? Probably Mr. Ashton probably did not. Oh, you have it in your agenda. It is in your agenda package. This is the letter. I did call Mr. McGinnis to advise him this letter was coming, and guess who called me back? Mr. Spina called me back. I'm sure there's a Mr. McGinnis somewhere, but he hasn't called me or Mr. Ogren. Mr. Spina and I had a nice conversation about it. He knew of the letter. Mr. McGinnis knew of the letter. He indicated to me that he anticipates that he wants to get a revised HCP which has the data in it that we've been working with over the last couple of years for attraction flows, for some assumptions of scenarios of how much water that we need for the environmental releases. Now, I will say with that the amount of water that we're needing for releases is being very reasonable. They're being very reasonable with us, and I think it's our advantage to continue to work with them in this regard. He did say it was a little bit surprising to me because one of the big issues we had is we want you to review the whole HCP and give us a big report. And he's very focused on the specifics that relate to the attraction releases and the flows and the specifics of it. And he didn't understand our concern was that we want to know if he thinks the whole thing is approaching the right way. And I gave him some examples of U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service want us to do an entire watershed evaluation, and we've told them we're not going to do that. They also want us to include the Tidewater Gobi in this report, which it's not included, and we told them we don't want to do that. We don't think it's necessary or appropriate. And when I mentioned those things to him, he kind of got to understanding that we're looking for an overall comment from him on the other sections of the report that are not specifically related to the details of the flows and the releases and that type of thing. So I don't think he understand where we were coming from until I discussed that with him. And I'm sure that if I don't have a response, and this letter did request a written response from them, if we don't have that within a couple of weeks, I'll be asking Mr. Ogren to call Mr. McGinnis and have a discussion about what are we going to get back, if anything, and when, because we'd least like a response back on our letter, if not the HCP. We are continuing discussions every month with Anthony Spina, our staff, and our consultant to continue to move this along, and we will continue to do that. So that's where we are with that, and that's the end of my report.
Questions? Discussion?
appropriate at that time, take the numbers, bring them current, and resubmit a revised draft that, if that's the approach that Mr. Ogren wants us to take, I haven't discussed this in detail with him, but we will, if it makes sense to give him a draft, we could push the comments required of this draft, or we could do a new one. I think Mr. Spina is pretty certain about what he thinks ought to happen, so that may be the most expedient way to revise that draft. I don't think it's going to be a lot to do, and it may be worth satisfying their initial concern about it.
I just wanted to speak to the issue that, you know, that is the area where we want to be able to focus on a revised HCP. You know, speaking to the issue of Tidewater Gobi and the other downstream issues, you know, we've taken the long-term historical perspective that you know, Zone 3's influences on the creek is really at the releases from the dam. And while that has certain, from the resource agency standpoint, there are certain risks associated with taking that position. You know, they can certainly fight back, and Anthony hasn't had so much concern there as some of the other resource agencies. But we would like to see that issue resolved, that we're not going to have expectations on, you know, further evaluations of Tidewater Gobi, or especially when we get into the channel, the Flood Control Zone 1 channel. And one, if we start getting pushed on that particular issue, we have started our environmental review, our CEQA work, on the Flood Control Zone 1 channel. And since that is a Section 7 permitting issue and not an HCP issue, one of our, you know, our basic position with the resource agencies is, look, we understand that you want to you want to know about the entire watershed. However, Zone 3's obligation is, you know, really at the releases of the dam. They don't go all the way to the ocean, but the Flood Control District in Zone 1 is picking up the environmental review during the channel. And so, you know, hopefully, again, if they, if some of the other resource agencies are pushing us on the Tidewater Gobi and everything, they'll be satisfied with the environmental work that we're initiating in the channel. And that way, again, it's the hope that the revisions are going to really focus in on, you know, hydrological data and not new species investigations or expanding the area of evaluation.
Questions for Mr. Ogren, since he's at the podium.
It's kind of a minor point, but as we've been installing additional stream gauges in the Rio Grande Creek, one thing that has come up that they've asked us for is the attraction releases are related to how much water flows from the river, from the creek, into the ocean. A big part of that is when the sandbar breaches on the beach, which tells the fish it's time to do what you do. And they have asked us to look at putting a, I call it a water height gauge, for lack of maybe a better description, but what we're anticipating trying to do is if we can put a gauge in the estuary lagoon that will indicate or will show us that we have a breach, and that would be indicated by a large drop, obviously, in the water. That would be helpful to be able to monitor this. There's some technical issues with that because it needs to be kind of in the middle of the lagoon, and, of course, to put anything in a lagoon is not easy to do. We're trying to figure out if technically we can do that. We'd like to have it a radio-controlled gauge that would send the information online real time that we could see that and kind of monitor it and keep track of it. I think Parks has some information about that. The state parks, we've been working with people who may have some. I think Mr. Wallace indicated the sanitation district may have some from quite a few years ago when they used to monitor the sandbar. So we're looking at that. Order of magnitude of putting that thing in would probably be a range of $10,000 to $20,000, mostly because it's got to be away from everything else. And so we're looking at that. I just want to bring that to your attention because that may be helpful in us getting through this attraction flow issue that is not really easily defined or remedied. So I'll be bringing that back to you when we get a little bit more firm information on it.
And where would that be paid for?
There may be some benefit for Zone 1 also. I know you've cost-shared some of these gauges. I assume it would be paid for out of the HCP one of the items that the HCP would be funding for the habitat and the species protection and upgrade, if you will.
Okay. Anything else for Mr. Benedix? Anybody? It does look like our interim downstream release schedule is about all we've got right now. Maybe if we have a wet winter, we'll be able to actually save a considerable amount of water with that program.
Yes, yes. Department, and there's been some changes in staff, but suffice it to say that we had some issues with having the recreation area operated by General Services. As we budget, the money is budgeted for both through both Public Works and General Services. And as you may recall, the reason that the rec area is included in this project is because it was part of the Davis-Grunsky grant that came about at the time of the project construction. And in your packet under page 5-3, you'll see a summary of costs when this project was constructed in the 1960s, I believe. And that indicates that where we got the funding sources from and what the Lopez construction costs were for the various major facility categories. As the Davis-Grunsky Act really expires the end of this calendar year, a benefit to Zone 3 is that if the recreation area is turned over to General Services, that Zone 3 doesn't stand behind it as the surety or as the co-signer, if you will, providing assurance that the recreation area is fully financially independent or sufficient. So the idea is we've talked with General Services and we agree that they could take it over. What that would do, there would be an agreement between the district and the county General Services Department that they would take over the operation as a lessee, I guess, of the district. The district still owns the property. And there would be provisions in there, just as we have at Salinas Dam with the city of San Luis Obispo, that they would operate the recreation facilities, which would include the wastewater treatment plant and the water system, which is a chlorination, three wells in a distribution system. Public Works Department doesn't have any problem with that. It's been successful at other locations. We believe there's the same risk that we would have with sort of any type of a subcontract operation. And as some of you may or may not know, Fluid Resources Management Company right now as a consultant is operating the rec area wastewater plant for us, has been doing so for about 8 months, I believe, as we have been trying to focus on getting the water treatment plant in operation. So that's been successful. We understand there's concerns about contamination. It's been self-sufficient. Parks has done a good job getting grants and those type of things that you've seen over the last few years to try to upgrade and maintain those facilities. And we don't do anything out there that we need to that would expend a lot of money. There are some backlog things that could be done, but it's on a sort of a nonprofit basis. If we don't have the money, it's not done. So we've been working with General Services on that. We anticipate that that will be a something that may start. I'm not sure that General Services is ready to take that over at the beginning of the fiscal year in July. I've talked to their staff, and they think more likely maybe calendar year 09 is when they may take that over. But we wanted to present it to you and have you know that we were formally having discussions with them. The next thing you may see would be probably a draft agreement. I don't know if we'd have to bring that. We should bring that to the committee, Mr. Ogren, but kind of letting you know that it's wrapping into something more formal at this point.
Just to add on to Dean's presentation, certainly there was a number of items that I wanted to make sure and come out and speak to today, but this was the primary purpose of me coming out is this reorganization of the zone of the recreational area activities from, you know, our Zone 3 or our department's operations on, over to General Services, the Parks Division. As far as the overall county, our administrative department, you know, admin has been, you know, looking at this. It's the reorganization has really been on the table for about 2 years. And, you know, they support it, but one of the you know, critical issues here is whether or not Zone 3 supports it. If, in fact, there is a Zone 3 endorsement, then it would work itself through the county's budget process, and it would, in effect, be, you know, in the budget in the upcoming budget. But concerns of Zone 3 also is, you know, there's not a critical time to move it forward now, and if there's specific issues that need to be addressed, we'll certainly do so. In terms of the agreement itself, though, we wouldn't really look at bringing the agreement back. The basic provisions are is that, you know, the debt that's associated with the recent wells that were constructed are still going to, you know, that debt is going to be transferred to parks so that they're going to be paying for that debt. It will have about, you know, a 30-day cancellation period in it so that, you know, as we move forward, if there is any operations, you know, especially from the perspective of Zone 3, any particular thing happens that is, you know, at the water slides. So, you know, sort of having two masters, if you will, Public Works and General Services over the recreation activities, we've been supportive of moving it, reorganizing it over to parks so that there's one master there. And that, you know, again, both in terms of the $7 million of deferred maintenance as well as, you know, the event that occurred a couple years ago at the water slide, that it creates immunity on, you know, the liability side from Zone 3 and the flood control district itself. And then also in terms of our various operations, since the recreation area is not, you know, one of our potable water supplies, then, you know, that is an operation that lends itself more to the privatization of it. FRM has been doing work out there. So we haven't had any sort of resistance from the unions on the privatization of that particular operation. And privatization has, you know, good opportunities in some situations, and we certainly see the opportunity here. You know, in contrast, if we were to propose privatization of some of our other operations, we're actually providing potable deliveries to communities and everything. We would expect that that would be much harder road to haul. So again, there's endorsement from county admin and the other types of county, you know, individuals who are looking at it. We think it's important, but at the same time, if your advisory group wants to, you know, continue the item and think about it, we're fine with that as well.
And this has been to TAC, and they endorse it?
Yeah, we've had a discussion regarding it. I don't know that there was a formal endorsement of it by the TAC. There was there wasn't any opposition, I guess. And we proposed that we would bring it to you. That was kind of their recommendation, as you can consider it.
John, do you remember any more about that TAC meeting? It seemed to me there wasn't any objection to.
I think, as Dean says, it was a discussion and focusing on the efficiency economy of the consolidation under one department rather than two. I think that was the primary focus.
Yeah, there are some double charges that the rec area hits through county overhead allocations, that there would be a 30-day opt-out provision just for unforeseen, you know, whatever might happen in the future. But besides that, you know, it's just a, you know, pretty basic provision that the flood control district leases the land to recreation for recreation limited purposes. And
we're going to get held harmless in the deal?
Oh, yes.
Mr. Earing.
Can you tell me a little bit more about this privatization that you were talking about?
We keep doing this thing.
Oh, well, similar to how it's been operating over about the last 8 months. Again, if the recreation area becomes fully, if parks becomes fully responsible for the recreation area, they will be using, you know, private forces in order to actually run the water system and the wastewater system. Because parks doesn't have individuals who are certified by the state in order to run the systems, so they would be utilizing private operators. And so, you know, again, there's an opportunity for privatization there that we would expect would have some, you know, cost savings associated with it. And this is the type of operation that the county has that is open to privatization.
Okay, but you're not. I mean, they're not considering, say, getting somebody in to run the entire recreational facilities and all that kind of stuff up there, are you?
No, they're not. And in fact, that's a good point.
I kind of get concerned about that.
Well, and you know what? We can, if that's a condition of your advisory committee's, support for this, that prior to any sort of wholesale privatization or that the assumption of the agreement is it's going to be run by county parks, that if there's any proposal that it change, that's not within the terms of within the terms of the agreement, and that way, if that does get considered in the future, then it comes back and gets consideration. So that would probably be a good condition to include in any action today. That it is our belief that Parks is going to continue to run the facility itself, all the recreational aspects of it. There's not an anticipated privatization of the overall. And since that is what our expectation is, then, endorsement with that condition would be appropriate.
Thank you.
Anybody else? I think there is a significant liability to the zone from the rec area.
Provision would be established in the agreement for anything, again, that might happen that we can't predict today.
Mr. Herring might be. Yeah. You going to make a motion, Mr. Herring?
Well, if I do, it's going to be a motion that's going to include the fact that I would not like to see that park facility and the recreational facilities turned over to some organization, private organization someplace. I still think it ought to be maintained by the parks of the county. And it at least they'll be responsible for it, okay?
I envision no problem.
Because the store is, I think the store up there is, it's leased out and,
yeah,
and some of the marina and that kind of thing. But still in all, they're the responsible parties taking in the fees and administering the recreational facilities up there. And I would like to at least add that to our endorsement. And with that, I guess I would be willing to make a motion that we do endorse this.
And Ted, could we add to that to at least have the agreement go back to the technical committee?
I think that's a wonderful idea, and I would accept that in my motion.
I'll second that.
What kind of a vote do we need here, Mr. Benedict?
I think a voice vote for the endorsement would be fine.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Spillway Raise pre-planning assessment. I think, Mr. Benedict, you're still on.
Yes, in your agenda packet item, I lost the page number.
6-1.
I believe it's
6-1, yeah.
Yes. There is a proposal that was presented to the TAC. We discussed at the last meeting, and the proposal is for a conceptual consideration, including an estimate and a schedule and a very rudimentary yield analysis of increasing the height of the storage of the dam by basically taking out the spillway, portion of the spillway, and putting a flexible device in there that we could adjust. What it would basically do, the intention is to probably store 2 to 3 feet of additional water. Increase would be with that dam in place. But this is a proposal that was suggested by the TAC. It's been reviewed. The TAC has endorsed it. The total cost of this would be $12,000 to have this preliminary conceptual study done. And we'd have a program construction and project cost estimate developed, some type of a time schedule. Under task two, we had them add a preliminary yield analysis to see how frequently, how much water we could store. And then there would be some discussion preliminary with the Division of Dam Safety to determine if there were any fatal flaws in the concept of doing this. The study would be done, and we would report back to the TAC and bring a recommendation back to your advisory committee whether we did anything beyond this or not. But the TAC has endorsed this and recommends that your committee approve going ahead with this. That's my report.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Benedix. Questions, comments? Mr. Ashton.
Yes, this additional height that you're proposing here, how does that affect the cities involved there? Does that increase our entitlement to water out there by storing additional water up there? Or exactly how does that affect the cities involved?
If we were able to store additional water, I believe we would use the current agreements that we have in order to portion up that water.
There is an old study done by Lawrence Fisk and McFarland that looked at the idea of raising the spillway in a temporary manner, and that study at that time, and it's probably a 20-year-old study, concluded that there could be a significant increase in safe yield on the order of 800 or 900 acre feet. So it could be a significant benefit if that were to be found to be the case now.
Paulo again, a lot of talking time today. Just a real quick clarification, you know, on Dean's comments is that if there is a spillway and if it increases the safe yield, then it's a discretionary decision of each of the Zone 3 agencies on whether to participate in that project or not. So if all of the agencies choose to participate in the project, then as Dean mentioned, yeah, everybody would share in the increase in safe yield. If only one agency wanted to pay for that project, then they would, you know, have the benefit. And that's one of the new provisions in the contracts that were revised earlier this decade that gives each of what's called additional projects. It gives each agency the ability to say yes or no as to whether they want to participate. But again, assuming that all the agencies say yes, then everybody would share in the safe yield.
Well, I think Jim brought this up, maybe a year or so ago? Yeah. And we've been kicking it around for quite a while, and it really has some merit because looking back at the Lawrence Fisk and McFarland study, which I think has been distributed to everybody here, it really has merit with some potential. The real question is the cost. The Nass Hermanno project with the inflatable dam on the spillway is very expensive. It's like $7 million or so, if I recall. So that's probably not an option for us. But on the other hand, there are some other methods that might be more cost-effective. And, yeah, I think we should at least go ahead with a study and see what the potential yield on it is and the cost.
I'd certainly be in favor of going through it, but I would like to know, you say the TAC basically approved this. Was that a unanimous decision?
Yes, they unanimously recommended that we go ahead with it.
Yeah. Okay, fine. I'd certainly be in favor of it.
Council Member Ashton, comment?
I did talk to my city manager today, and Bob is he sounded quite enthused about this prospect here and would like to have us go ahead with the at least the study there until we see all the ramifications that involve.
Sounds like we would have a unanimous endorsement if somebody would make a motion.
I move we go forward with this.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Anybody opposed? Mr. Benedix, you're still up, it looks like, with Lopez Water Body Contact Water Code Amendment.
Yes. When I was driving down here, I was trying to figure out how to summarize this for you. Currently, the Lopez water has body contact in the lake, and because of that, when we built the facility, the state water code does not allow, or currently does not allow, you to take body contact water and put it directly through a conventional filtration plant. However, because of that, when we had our conventional plant, we constructed a terminal reservoir, which provides 30-day non-contact settlement through our former conventional filtration plant. Since we have the new upgrade, we have a new membrane technology, which is very, very effective at reducing the pathogens, which are the concern trophic event, such as our terminal reservoir, as you may know, is split by Orchid Road. And if, heaven forbid, there was a bad accident there, guess where that accidental material would go? It would go into the terminal reservoir, which would pretty much preclude us using that. that's really the only major eventuality that we can consider. But the city of Paso Robles with the new Nacimiento project is working on a membrane plant also. They're developing the design for a new, completely new membrane plant to treat their Nacimiento water. And part of their opportunity, they believe, is to go ahead and ask for an exception for taking the Nacimiento water, which has body contact, and treating that directly through their new membrane plant. Of course, the county staff is working on that Nacimiento project, and they've approached us and asked us if we would like to sort of piggyback with them and request an exception, since we also have a membrane plant, of going along and trying to obtain or modify, I guess it would be, legislation in the water code to allow Lopez to process directly from the raw water into our membrane system, as Paso Robles is proposing to do. The State Department of Health Services, our contact down there, really endorses us doing this. They think it's a good eventuality that we should have. There's no reason technically why it doesn't work. Our membrane system is great for this type of thing if we needed to do it. So we don't really see any downside in this. And basically, we have indicated to the City of Paso Robles and the Nacimiento Advisory Committee that we would be interested in participating in that. We wanted to bring it to your agency and have you be aware of that. I will say that I briefly brought it up to the TAC, and the TAC would like a little bit more information about it before we proceed much into it. There's really not much that we would expend in doing this, but I intend on bringing a report back to them next month and probably to your committee in 2 months, giving you a short staff report summary of what it would mean. It's really pretty simple, but it's changing some legislation. So I wanted to initially broach that with you and let you know we were working on that. Again, as another opportunity we have to provide for eventualities in our system that we may not even anticipate right now. That's the end of my report.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Benedix. Any questions or concerns? Mrs. Dean? No?
Joe? But it sounds like the only issue
that will allow some operational flexibility that we don't have that we could use. And I see Mr. Beaton nodding in the audience. Perhaps he could indicate whether that's in fact the case.
That is correct. There can be times of the year when water quality may be better at Lopez Lake than it would be at the terminal, and it would allow us to take that water directly. As Dean said, it pretty much is plumbed already to do that. The old plant was set up that way too, to be able to deliver water directly down the distribution line in case of an emergency. So it does make sense. It does give us more flexibility. As Dean mentioned earlier, the more flexibility we have in the plant, the better we are to deal with unforeseen circumstances. So it is a good opportunity for us.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Beaton? Thank you, John. Any questions, concerns? This is receive and file, and
yes.
Be prepared for endorsement or other action in a couple of months.
Yes.
Anything else on that, Mr. Benedix?
No, that's it.
All right, committee member reports or comments, and Mrs. Dean, you're to my right. Do you have anything you'd like to bring up?
I'd like to thank John Beaton for taking me through the water treatment plant.
Well.
It was a wonderful experience, and I learned a lot, and now I understand a lot more about how the plant operates and how sensitive it is, and I have a lot more empathy for what's been going on at the plant. So it was altogether a really wonderful tour, and I want to thank him for that.
Thank you for those comments. Mr. Costello?
I've got nothing further tonight.
Mr. Wallace?
Just like to thank Jennifer and the staff at Public Works for their work on the budget and accommodating our many requests for tweaks and modifications to it. Thank you.
As always, Dean, you did a fantastic job. I'm glad to see you back this time, and we missed you at the last meeting. So, always a very good job, and so and the other staff members who made presentations tonight. Thank you.
Mr. Ashton.
I don't have any further comments other than I concur with the fellow members there that the great job staff has been doing there.